Welcome back to Current State on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. We are glad you're along for Wednesday, April 29th. Last week, longtime Lansing singer Joshua Davis needed to be saved by tweeting viewers to survive on NBC's The Voice. This week, he had no trouble advancing. After singing Fields of Gold by Sting on Monday, which we replayed a little bit of yesterday, Davis was the first singer saved on last night's show. So he moves on from the final eight to the final six, heading into next week's shows. Everybody's keeping an eye on Joshua Davis. Well done. I'm Mark Bayshore. At the top of our program today, 2 weeks ago, a sex education class at East Lansing High School unleashed some strong reactions in the community. Instruction involving abstinence, which is required by Michigan law, was conducted by Pregnancy Services of Greater Lansing, an organization that opposes abortion. The class provoked negative comments about the SMART curriculum that's been used to teach abstinence in East Lansing High School for years. One group at the school wants more student involvement in sex education. Students for Gender Equality has been working with our first guest to change the language in Michigan's current sex ed laws. Joining us by phone to talk about his effort, State Senator Curtis Hertel Jr. He's a Democrat representing Michigan's 23rd Senate District, which includes East Lansing. Curtis Hertel, welcome back to Current State.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for having me on.
You actually began studying the issue of sex education in public schools even before the recent tweeting episode that lambasted this approach. Why did you originally reach out to students about this?
Well, I was invited to speak to a group, the student equality group at East Lansing. And when I got there, I was so impressed. I mean, to have 40 kids on a Tuesday night at 7 o'clock to talk about gender equality issues. You know, people talk about young people not being motivated politically, but they're certainly motivated for change. And after talking to them, I had some real concerns, not only with some of the things that were going on in East Lansing, but also things that were going on statewide. And so we talked about lots of different issues, but this is one that we focused on. And after doing so, we decided to work together on some legislation.
Did the SMART curriculum, did the abstinence unit come up in your conversations with them?
I was not aware that there was a pregnancy crisis center in, teaching abstinence in East Lansing, but certainly state law requires some abstinence be part of the discussion, and I'm not opposed to that, and I don't think they are either. I think what we're opposed to is kids getting misinformation or scare tactics being used and not getting some real relevant information that I think is needed. So, I'm opposed to, I don't think a pregnancy crisis center, which is associated with Right to Life and advertises themselves as out there trying to get women to come in that are in an emergency situation, I don't think they have a great record with the truth, and I don't think they should be teaching our kids.
Did the gender equality group bring up how detailed did they get about this abstinence curriculum?
Well, it wasn't just the abstinence curriculum. You know, they had concerns about LGBT kids not getting any information and teaching nothing about that. They had concerns about some of the safety issues that they weren't really being taught much in regard to family planning options or how those things work. Their concerns weren't specifically just about the abstinence. I mean, it was about the entire curriculum. And I do think our curriculum is outdated and can be changed.
Well, there was an awful lot of response to what were perceived as real scare tactics in the SMART curriculum. Go a little bit deeper with us on what scare tactics you heard about from the gender equality group.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of the things, like, for example, teaching that condoms have a 17% fail rate. That is just not true. Or telling people that there was an entire box of condoms that had holes in it. When we say things like that, we are discouraging kids from using safe sex. The reality is, at some point these kids, are going to go on to college. At some point, most kids are going to become sexually active before marriage. I mean, that's just the reality of today. And so to not give them the tools to actually prevent unwanted pregnancy and STIs doesn't make sense. So that was some of the things they were being taught. There were some inaccurate scientific things. I'm not sure how much details we can get into on the radio.
No, I think a lot of our listeners are pretty familiar with a number of the details. Why don't we find out a little bit more here about what you have in mind for a revamped sex ed bill? Is your focus on just getting misinformation and scare tactics out of the curriculum?
That's part of it, but that's not all of it. I mean, I still think we need to talk about abstinence, and I think it's good. I think we should more talk about abstinence until the point where people are ready emotionally, financially, for the responsibilities of sex, instead of talking about just marriage. One, because we have groups of people that can't actually be married in the state, and two, because it's just, you know, young people are getting married in their late 20s, early 30s now, and it's just not. Most of them it's not going to be the plan. So we should certainly talk about abstinence. It's very important, but I think we should talk about abstinence in a way that talks about more in being emotionally and financially ready for the responsibilities of sex. I think, you know, there are problems I have with the board. I think that a student should be required to be part of the board. They're not now. They can be on the board, but they're not actually required.
What board?
There's a sex ed board that is actually created in each state. So each school district. So I think that's important. I think we need to talk about the responsibilities of consent with kids. I don't think that's really covered in the law. So we have an epidemic of sexual assault on our college campuses. We need to educate students that they can say no at any time, and that consent is not a one-time thing, but it's an ongoing part of the process. And I think we need to do that for safety reasons, and the real consequences of rape and date rape and all those things that I don't think are really covered very well under the current law. So I think some of it just needs to be updated to actual science. I mean, we still talk about sexually transmitted diseases, but really the science now talks about sexually transmitted infections. So there are just some small things that we can actually change in the law as well. The most important, I think, is that we still refer in the law to you cannot teach about anything that is illegal under Michigan law, and refers directly to gay and lesbian behavior. So even though those laws have been struck down by the courts, it still refers back to them. So school districts often feel that they can't actually talk about gay, lesbian, and transgender relationships because of that. So obviously, we shouldn't have discriminatory laws in our sex ed classes, especially those that have been actually declared unconstitutional. But unfortunately, we still have them referred to in our sex ed laws, and that should be changed.
Curtis Hertel Jr., a state senator from East Lansing, is our guest on Current State. We're talking about sex education curriculums in East Lansing and his efforts to revisit how sex ed is taught in Michigan schools. Does religion have a place in a unit on abstinence?
Not in my opinion. I mean, in my opinion, religious beliefs should be taught at home. And, we can certainly talk about morals and those things. And we can talk about, legal consequences. We can talk about, those kinds of issues. But the idea that we actually will pick one religious group's interpretation of sex and not another's is discriminatory and has no place in schools. You know, I mean, you have the responsibility at home to teach your kids about your moral teachings. The school district shouldn't be doing it.
Are you hearing from people, or have you heard since this episode at East Lansing, have you heard from people who support the SMART curriculum?
I've read newspaper comments about it, I guess. I mean, that counts as hearing from. And I've certainly seen some comments online. I mean, East Lansing is a fairly progressive community, so I don't think that there's going to be a whole lot of people that support the SMART program. Well, but the people that have that opinion, that's fine. But I think the majority of people in East Lansing would be opposed to a pregnancy crisis center tied to Right to Life.
Well, this gets complicated, though, because you represent a district that's a lot bigger than East Lansing. If you were to encounter support for the SMART curriculum in another community, how do you think you'd respond to that?
Well, again, I think it's a bad idea for SMART to be involved. And as a I'm not only a state senator, but I'm also a parent in the East Lansing School District. So I guess my opinion is multifaceted there. If a different school district wanted to use SMART and the parents and the board approved that, then I guess that is their business. I mean, there's no legal. We're not trying to ban any outside groups from coming in, just like if Planned Parenthood was going to be used. But I do think that the parents should be made aware that there is a political slant before their kids actually go to these classes. And I don't think parents in East Lansing were aware of this. And frankly, I don't think the board was aware of it. This was a decision that was made 18 years ago under a different time. The contract's been extended since then. I don't think anyone was researching who this group was. So I don't want to play all the blame on the board either. I think that now that they have more information, they're reviewing that decision, and that's the way it should be done.
Curtis, we have less than 30 seconds. I want to ask you how your fellow legislators are responding to your ideas. Have you had a chance to run this by your fellow senators?
You know, we've had some discussions, but I mean, we don't have draft language yet either. So, I mean, I'm working. The kids came in and presented their language to us. We're in the process of getting that drafted by the Legislative Service Bureau with our agreements to that. And then we're going to take it around to some other organizations and get their support and make sure that their input's in there before we move forward.
Curtis Sertell Jr. is a Democratic state senator from East Lansing. He's working with a group of students from East Lansing High School and others to draft legislation that might change the way sex education is taught in public schools. Curtis Sertell, thank you.
Thank you.
It's Current State on 90.5 WKAR. We come your way every day at noon on AM 870 WKAR. Wednesday on our program means it's time for Neighbors in Action, when we feature people and organizations working to make Greater Lansing a better place. Today we look at Epiphany Now, an event coming up on Sunday. Participants will be given ideas on ways to pass kindness forward, right? Pay it forward, right? Later that day, people will get back together to tell the stories of the things they did and the reactions of those they helped along the way. Epiphany Now was the brainchild of Bob Hoffman, who you may know from his work in the publicity department at MSU's Wharton Center. We're also talking today with Lisa Allen, who's taken part in the event over the years. Welcome back, Bob. Welcome, Lisa.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Start with some background for us here. Bob, where did the idea for Epiphany Now come from?
2009, it came about, and it was kind of random. In the car, somebody cut me off, and they weren't paying attention to me, and I wasn't paying attention to them, and I just started thinking about that. And from there, literally, we organized an event where we thought, let's just go out and break those barriers that happen where you're kind of too into yourself. And so we did, and hundreds of people showed up for the first event. Literally, it was amazing. And since then, people were like, when's the next event? So we've been going since then. Every year we've had different events where people gather together. We give them ideas of things they can do to make a difference. They go out into the community to do that, and then they come back and share their story.
And what kinds of things have you done? Give us some idea.
Well, I want to. Lisa has a great one, and that she really made a huge impact.
When did you get on board, Lisa?
I think it's been a couple of years. I heard about what Bob was doing and just got really excited about it. Thought, this is something I've got to participate in. And so, what we've been doing for the last couple of years is we've been working at what we call a Who's Your Mama? And I know it sounds kind of like, who's your mama? But we decided that we would want to give back to students at Michigan State University. And so one of the things we've been doing is meeting at the Michigan Bookstore and other places around campus right around finals week. And we have been providing gift baskets and a whole lot of love to students right before finals. And this came about because I traveled to China a couple years ago and met some Chinese students. And their parents, they don't go back. So the interesting part about it was that we actually not only gave out these gift bags, which they really appreciated, they're completely free, they were totally shocked, but we also gave out a lot of hugs that day too. And we were just amazed how the students reacted and how they appreciated it.
What are these encounters like from your perspective, Bob?
Amazing.
I mean, you just kind of descend on people and do something nice for them.
We have little cards that we give people, and it's Epiphany Now, Pass It Forward. You too can make a difference in somebody else's life. We give those cards to people and say, give them out. And they come back and share their story. And it's an incredible feeling. I mean, the electricity in the room is amazing. So many people have different ideas, and Who's Your Mama was just such a great idea. But people literally go out and do yard work for other people, their neighbors.
Is there one encounter that really stands out in your memory? I mean, you actually dive in. You do more than just run the organization. You do it as well, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think one that a group of people went to Meijer and paid for a prescription for an elderly person who didn't have the funds to do that.
Okay.
The pharmacist said it would be this amount, and the lady said, oh, I'll pick it up later. And somebody went in and paid for that. And that really touched me because it was like, wow, we've had people go and organize yard work for a family whose husband was dying of cancer and didn't have the opportunity to do the yard work because there's other important things happening. And so they organized a team of people to go in and rake the leaves and pick up the lawn and mow the lawn. So it's events like that. It doesn't have to cost anything to do something kind for somebody. It's just doing that effort.
How big is your posse here? You got a lot. You got dozens of people on board. How many?
We have had up to 250 people show up. Since 2009, we've had more than 3,000 people attend, and we've been in Illinois, we've been in Grand Rapids, we've been in St. John, we've been all over. It's organized from this one little event. The word has spread. I get calls all the time from people saying, hey, we want to do this here. CBS News did a story on
right.
us, and that really propelled us. I've had calls all over the nation. Passing it forward has happened forever. People do this all the time. We're just a little bit organized because we believe in the power of a story. Come back and share your story. And when you hear those stories, you're motivated and encouraged to do more, I think.
We're talking with Bob Hoffman, organizer of this Sunday's Epiphany Now event, and Epiphany Now participant, volunteer Lisa Allen. Volunteers will gather at the MSU Federal Credit Union headquarters on West Road in East Lansing Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock. We'll go out, pay it forward for strangers in some fashion, and then get back together at 3 o'clock to tell and hear the stories about the day's activities. This year you're launching something you're calling, is it YPIF?
YPIF.
YPIF, Youth Passing Kindness Forward. Tell us about that.
You know, I heard about all these kids that are doing amazing things. There was a little kid in Howell who raised funds to pay for school lunches for one of his classmates. And then there was a girl in Battle Creek who raised funds for the zoo. And I went to the board and said, hey, listen, why don't we do something to honor kids? Because there's kids locally that are doing amazing things too. And so let's give them an award, but then also let's give them some funds towards their charity. So this year we're giving out two awards. We've got Isabel Wynn and Zoe Ziegler from Okemos, Michigan, who organized a 5K race to benefit Life as a Zebra Foundation, which pays attention to invisible illnesses. So they're being awarded $500. But then also on our website, we have a link where people can also donate to them, and they've gotten some extra donations. And then a girl in South Lyon, Michigan, applied for the YPIF award, and she's been raising thousands of dollars for an organization called Brianna's Rose Foundation. And this small girl has dystonia, which is a rare neuromuscular disorder, and so she's been raising funds to help handicap their house, basically.
Lisa Allen, do you have kids who are involved?
I do. In fact, last year when we were doing one of our Who's Your Mama, we did it outside of a big, huge final, counting final, and my son came out and was just shocked that mom was standing there with a with a Who's Your Mama basket and cookies and everything else. And again, the reaction from the students is just amazing. You know, they came out and we said, you did a great job. And they acted like we were their moms. We gave them a big hug. And it was the first person, you know, they call when they come out of a final, is mom and dad, and say, hey, I just nailed it.
Okay.
But instead, they were saying it to us. And it was just, it just brought so much joy. And I just want to encourage everybody to come this weekend. You don't have to be super organized. It's all free. Just show up. You know, and come up with an idea. It can be as simple as buying flowers for somebody and taking it to them. And it'll just bring you pure joy.
I remember you telling the story about the student that actually started crying and said, I miss my mom so much. Thank you.
Right.
For hugging me.
For hugging. It's free.
Hugs are free, yeah. Are there times when you encounter people who can't believe they're benefiting from this kind of benevolence?
Oh, absolutely. They said, what's the catch? Everybody says, what's the catch? What am I buying? Well, I said, it's completely free.
It's a cynical age we live in, isn't it? Hold it. There's got to be a catch.
No. We just, you know, people can't believe it, and they're just so appreciative. And they usually say, you mean this is free? This is free? I don't have to do anything? And we said, no, it's just... We just want you to know how much we appreciate you as students, and we know this is a rough week, and that's just one example. People buy flowers, and as Bob is saying, and take them over to hospitals and senior centers, and they have the same kinds of reactions there. People just can't believe that people are just being kind and passing this on, and we just can't get enough kindness in the world, especially today.
We have one story, if I may, Mark, that stands out. A woman had her children, and she had problems during labor, and the doctor actually was able to save the baby. This was 3 years ago, and she came to the event and said, I never thanked that doctor for saving my baby. And so she organized a group of friends, and they went to Sparrow Hospital and happened to chance that the doctor was there, and they were able to just go and say, I just want to thank you for what you do. You saved a life. And so many times that people encounter you and you do things and there's not that opportunity to say thank you, that's a huge pass it forward.
Reminds
moment.
Me of the State Journal. You see the State Journal column every Sunday, I think.
Yep.
It's just about thanks. You know, it's the very thing that you're talking about, only in print form. Bob Hoffman and Lisa Allen are here for today's Neighbors in Action segment. We've been talking about Epiphany Now coming up on Sunday. And we want to wish you luck. Once again, it's 1 o'clock, Michigan's MSU FCU headquarters, West Road,
West
East Lansing.
West Road in East Lansing. And our website is EPIF, for Pass It Forward, ANYNOW.org, Epiphany Now. So it's spelled a little bit differently.
Sounds really rewarding. Have a great time on Sunday.
Thanks.
Nice to see
Thank
both
you.
Of you. Current State is looking for more nominations for our Neighbors in Action feature. Please help us out. Email us your suggestions to currentstate@wkar.org, put Neighbors in Action in the subject line, or tweet us at KAR Current State. Tell us a little bit about why you think they should be featured for the great work they do. Current State on 90.5 WKAR. April is National Poetry Month, and before we get to the tulips and sunny days of May, we wanted to take some time to listen to one of the most famous poems about this month. Here is director of the Michigan State University Center for Poetry, Anita Skeen, reading an excerpt from The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot.
April is the cruelest month, breeding lilacs out of the dead land, mixing memory and desire, stirring dull roots with spring rain. Winter kept us warm, covering earth in forgetful snow, feeding a little life with dried tubers. Summer surprised us, coming over the Starnberger See with a shower of rain. We stopped in the colonnade and went on in sunlight into the Hofgarten and drank coffee and talked for an hour. Ben gar keine Russen stamm aus lauten Eichdeutsch. And when we were children, staying at the Archduke's, my cousin's, he took me out in a sled, and I was frightened. He said, Marie, Marie, hold on tight. And down we went. In the mountains, there you feel free. I read much of the night, and go south in the winter.
That was MSU professor Anita Skeen reading an excerpt from The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot. Our monthly public poetry announcements are produced in partnership with the MSU Center for Poetry. Well, coming up in the program, Michigan, a state that's practically synonymous with the auto industry, has the highest car insurance rates in the nation. That's due in part to policies that provide unlimited lifetime benefits to people injured in accidents. Now, state lawmakers are trying to make changes that they say will bring the cost of insurance down. There's a lot that disagree with that move. We'll talk with Detroit Free Press reporter Kathleen Gray to learn more. And Downton Abbey, as you've never seen it before, Scott Pohl talks to Luke Kempner, the writer and star of America's Got Downton, a one-man parody of the popular PBS series coming to Wharton Center. That's all on the way on Current State.
Morning Edition is everywhere.
Lourdes Garcia,
Alice Fugin,
Ari Shapiro,
NPR News,
Monrovia,
Sao Paulo,
Beirut,
London. Reporting from bunkers, streets, alleys, jungles, and deserts. But most importantly, we're wherever you are. Start your day with a trip around the world and wake up with Morning Edition from NPR News.
The morning's news between 5 and 9 on 90.5 WKAR.
The pick a side problem in covering Israel.
This idea that you can't show empathy for both Israelis and Palestinians, I think it's really troubling. I mean, I have empathy for all kinds of people.
Jody Rodoran on the tough skin you need to be the New York Times bureau chief in Jerusalem. Next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
The Takeaway today at 3 on AM 870 WKAR.
Current State on 90.5 WKAR and AM 870 WKAR. Many people remember the iconic photograph of a helicopter on the rooftop of a building in Saigon, South Vietnam, evacuating people before the city fell to the North Vietnamese Army. That photograph, taken 40 years ago today, came to symbolize America's withdrawal from Vietnam. That building was a safe house used by the CIA. But there was another ladder used that day, too. That one on the roof of the U.S. Embassy in Saigon was used by some 6,000 people during their escape. That ladder is in the Gerald R. Ford Presidential Museum in Grand Rapids, where Jim Kratzis serves as deputy director.
Americans might see that ladder as a symbol of our defeat. I like to take President Ford's approach. He saw that ladder as a ladder to freedom for so many of the Vietnamese who eventually came to America. So many people kept their freedom by going up that staircase and going off to a better world.
The next day, April 30th, 1975, Saigon fell to North Vietnam. It was quickly renamed Ho Chi Minh City. Current State on WKAR, I'm Mark Bayshore. Changes may be in store for Michigan's unique approach to catastrophic auto insurance claims. For decades, Michigan car accident victims with catastrophic injuries have received lifetime medical benefits and insurance coverage, sometimes costing well into the millions of dollars. That money comes from relatively costly insurance premiums and a roughly $190 premium paid annually by all registered Michigan drivers. But insurance companies and customers have long said the program has pushed auto insurance rates into the stratosphere. They point to premiums which can reach $5,000 a year in the city of Detroit and make Michigan a less desirable place to live. They say cost controls must be imposed. The subject has generated a heated battle. Quite a few critics call it a cruel money grab by the insurance industry and politicians. Here to help us better understand what's going on is the Detroit Free Press's Kathleen Gray. Thank you for being here today.
Hi, Mark.
There's a lot in play here.
There is.
But on the surface, at least, the battle seems to be between those who feel Michigan has to do something to lower its very high auto insurance rates and those who say it's worth it because they fund a really important Catastrophic Claims Program. Talk to us just a little bit about the arguments on both sides, please. First, the reformers who want premiums to come down. How are they making their case?
Well, they're rightly saying Michigan has some of the highest insurance rates in the nation. Detroit has the highest insurance rate in the nation. I talked with a guy yesterday who's insuring a 2003 Mercury Marquis, and his insurance premium is $5,000 a year.
Yeah.
And he's got a spotless record. So the insurance rates are very, very high. Michigan is the only state that has this type of lifetime benefits for catastrophically injured people. And the people who are in that pool and the people who care for them say it's worth it. Whenever reform is proposed in Michigan, and it's proposed very often, they all come to the Capitol. They all testify. They make very, very compelling stories. Their complaints are that it takes a tremendous amount of work to care for them, and they are still leading productive lives, but they need a lot of help to do that. I talked with another woman last week whose daughter was injured in 1989. Her care has totaled $17 million since that time. But her daughter's a wedding planner. She's able to lead a productive life, but she's been able to lead a productive life because of this insurance coverage and this help that's been provided through the Michigan Catastrophic Claims Association.
Advocates for reform also say that the high rates serve as a deterrent for people to come to the state.
Yes,
anything
absolutely
to that? I mean, I'm.
Well, it's certainly a deterrent for, you know, would you want to move to Detroit with high rates like that? Home insurance rates are incredibly high too. So it's certainly something to think about when you're thinking about what area you're going to move into.
There's a lot of TV ads on this issue that are probably on as we speak, and some of them show victims of catastrophic accidents saying they wouldn't have received the care they needed along the lines of your previous comments without the current system, suggesting that victims of really horrible accidents will really lose out if this moves forward. Can you help us understand what and how much these car accident victims would lose?
Well, the proposal out there now would cap the amount of money that hospitals and caregivers could charge for the services that they're providing. It's 150% of the rate that Medicare patients get. But the difference that the opponents of this new legislation say is that the care for people who are catastrophically injured is so much more complicated and so much more expensive. For instance, the physical therapy, a treadmill for a person who's been catastrophically injured and trying to get some sort of movement back is, I think, $49,000. There's another piece of equipment that's $29,000 that is far less under more normal injury circumstances. So that's the cap on health care costs. The injured people are really afraid that they're not going to be able to get the amount of physical therapy that they need, that that's going to be cut down. Also, the amount of money that is paid to people who are caring, home health care workers who are caring for these injured people, is going to be capped.
There's a lot in play here trying to understand this. Correct me if I'm wrong, but would the current program covers people for life.
Yes.
Would that continue? I'm led to believe that the lifelong coverage would continue, but what we're mainly talking about here is cost controls imposed on the care itself.
Right.
Is that
right.
the heart of this?
There would still be lifetime benefits. Previous iterations of this legislation would have imposed caps on the amount of money that could be covered, but this is unlimited lifetime benefits. And again, Michigan is the only state that does that. Supporters of this legislation say, why is Michigan the only one? And opponents of this legislation said, why would we want to take this away? There are almost 15,000 people who are receiving money through the MCCA and are getting money through these claims. And you know, obviously it's a growing population. About 800 claims come in a year or more.
It is a growing population, really.
Well, the catastrophically injured people, you know, there's so many car accidents in this day and age that they get new patients every year into this. And insurance companies pick up the cost up to $535,000, and then the catastrophic claims picks up the lifetime benefits for forever until they pass.
Kathleen Gray of the Detroit Free Press is helping us understand efforts to reform Michigan's no-fault auto insurance law. She has been covering it for the Free Press and Michigan.com. You have some powerful lobbies in play here as well. The insurance industry, which is pro-reform, hospitals, which are not. What impact are these rather well-financed players having?
Well, they're having a big impact. The insurance industry has been working this for a long time. They want this reform, and they contribute generously to lawmakers. The Health and Hospital Association is approaching $1 million on an ad buy opposing this legislation. So there's big money at stake here. Mm-hmm. So there's big money that's being spent.
Many of whom have contributed to the elected officials who are actually doing the voting here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I've got to ask you about L. Brooks Patterson, the Oakland County executive and a Republican who is among the opponents here. He, referring to the Michigan Catastrophic Claims Fund, which makes the payouts to the victims of the accidents, he told your Free Press colleague Mitch Albom that, quote, "the fund was created to protect the most vulnerable people in society. Today it has about $20 billion, but the legislators can't get to it. The insurance companies can't get to it, and it's driving them crazy, and they're going to do anything they can to tear down that gate." Is he right? There's all of this money that he feels legislators and the insurance industry want to have at.
Oh, sure. You know, everybody wants a piece of the pie, but taking that money, there are risks of trying to divert that money to other things. Michigan voters voted for this type of system back in the 70s. And so taking the money away is a really difficult thing to do, but it's happened. Under pressure from the legislature and Governor Engler back in 1998, remember, all of us got a $180 check from the Michigan Catastrophic Claims Association because they had supposedly a surplus. Mm. And so it's happened before, but it's a really difficult thing to do.
Well, are opponents of the current measure against all efforts to reform no fault, or are they is it specifically the measure that's in front of legislators right now?
Well, they're opposed to that measure. They have offered a compromise. The Michigan Health and Hospital Association is claiming that this reform will cut their revenues by $1.2 billion a year. They have offered a 20% cut in the rates that they charge in order to do this, which would mean a $500 million cut for them. But that was rejected. The legislature, the House Insurance Committee, passed something different. It passed the Medicare cap, which is 150% of the Medicare.
Well, there are still discussions going on this week. Is the measure still being altered to your knowledge? I mean,
there are certainly still discussions going on, because if they had the votes for it, they would have voted for it already.
And I've got to ask you where Governor Snyder stands in this measure.
Governor Snyder wants no-fault reform.
He does. He would support the measure that is, by and large, before the legislature right now, that's been approved by the House.
He supported a measure that went even further than this one does. He supported that one last year, so I think that he would support this measure as well. I haven't asked him specifically about this particular package.
This has been a really constructive conversation. I really want to thank you. Kathleen Gray has been covering efforts to reform Michigan auto no-fault for the Detroit Free Press. Thanks, Kathy.
Sure.
Current state on 90.5 WKAR, the theme from Downton Abbey there. The program is the biggest hit show on PBS in many years. So popular, in fact, that a one-man show poking gentle fun at Downton Abbey is touring the country, including a stop at MSU's Wharton Center this week. Current State Scott Pohl is here with more on America's Got Downton. What's going on here, Scott?
This is really kind of a crazy idea, Mark. One man, a young actor, comedian, impressionist named Luke Kempner, stars in this production. Kempner has performed in everything from big stage musicals to small comedy clubs, and he's posted lots of clips on YouTube. The ball really got rolling for him when his clip, Downstairs at Downton, went viral.
Absolutely. You know, sort of, you know, I'd always, from when I was at drama school, I used to sort of always get up and sort of do a 10-minute comedy set when we did a sort of concert at Christmas time, and I would make fun of all the teachers, and it was always something I really enjoyed doing. And about 2 years ago, I really wanted to get my impressions out there to the world, and I started putting it on YouTube. And like you say, you know, Downstairs at Downton was a video that sort of went viral overnight, and that's kind of where the idea from the show originated from. And it, you know, I had a wonderful producer, James Seabright, who came to me and discussed, you know, potentially making it into a live show. And then we got on board an incredible lighting designer called Tim Maskell and Owen Lewis, who's a great director. And we made this show. Originally, it was called The Only Way is Downton when it was in the UK. And then it's had a name change and a revamp for the States. And it's now America's Got Downton. And, yeah, it's just stupidly exciting. It's great.
So when it comes to writing the show, did you write the show yourself, get some help in writing it?
I write the show myself, but I have Owen Lewis, the director, who helps me a lot, and another guy called Jeremy Lim, who's a great comedian veteran, and they help me get the show to its tip-top state.
I want to ask you about getting the show to the West End of London, because I think a lot of American audiences have never been to London, but they're familiar with West End. They think of that as a big deal when they hear that. How did you get a one-man show to the West End?
Well, I originally did it in Edinburgh, the Edinburgh Festival, which is the big comedy fringe festival, and it was in a room, a 49-seater room that was hotter than the sun, but had some great people from London who came to see the show there, and they wanted to take it to the West End, and we played there for a month at the beginning of last year. And then went on a UK tour and went to Spain and went to Moscow, and now here we are in North America. So it's great.
Spain and Moscow?
Yeah, it was mad. Like, went over to Moscow at the end of last year, and there was big audiences, and they were great. You know, a lot of them they'd watched Downton, but they'd seen it dubbed, so they didn't know if my impressions were any good at all, but they really laughed and it was really enjoyable.
Now, if it's a one-man show,
yes,
you include the female Downton Abbey characters, and so as an impressionist, are they any more difficult for you to get right?
Oh, they're more enjoyable. You never got everyone from Mrs. Patmore, the cook. She's obviously a lovely woman, a very, very lovely woman. And there's also me, Mrs. Patmore. Yes, thank you, Daisy. And it's not only me. We've also got the Dowager Countess, you know, Dame Maggie Smith. It's lovely to talk to you, Scott. You're very, very kind, my dear. And then also characters like Mrs. Hughes, you know, she's Scottish, so I found the accent quite easy to get because I've got a lot of Scottish friends. But, you know, she's got a great intonation to her voice, and it's totally enjoyable to do. So I try and put as many female characters in sort of as matching up to the men.
So how many characters in all?
There's 46 in total. And it's not just Downton. There's also characters from Dancing with the Stars, people like Bruno Tognoli. You know, he's there, and it's very, very good, my darling. And also Lynn Goodman's there. It's lovely to speak to you, Scott. It's a wonderful show. Well done. So I've got all sorts of characters in there.
This is one of those challenging interviews where I'm trying not to laugh all the time through the interview.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's good to know. Laugh. Let it out, man.
We're talking with Luke Kempner. His one-man show, America's Got Downton, comes to East Lansing on April 30th. Have you heard reaction from the people who make or star in the real Downton Abbey?
Yeah, little bits and bobs, especially when I originally did my video. You know, I got some really lovely responses from Jim Carter, who plays Mr. Carson. He said he enjoys the impression. And then I also had Julian Fellows sent a message via a friend of mine to say that he'd seen and enjoyed my voices. And then, you know, Elizabeth McGovern, who plays Lady Cora, she'd sent her family along to see the show. And her daughters came up to me and were like, "We loved your show." So it's been really positively received from anyone who's involved with Downton, because it's, you know, I'm a super fan of Downton, and it comes from a place of fun and silliness. It's not a sort of jibe at Downton Abbey. It's my favorite show. So, yeah.
Can you tell me about the costuming and the set design for your show?
It's very simple. Tim Maskell has done an incredible lighting design to make it, you know, look so we can go from being in upstairs in the drawing room to, you know, on the set of Dancing with the Stars very easily. And my costume, you know, is I dress as a butler and it's not all sort of wigs and glasses. You know, I try to sort of do it by mannerisms and voices to sort of create the world that you're watching. But I'm dressed as a butler, and I might slip the jacket off to look a little bit more like Tom Bergeron, and then put it back on if I'm being Mr. Carson. But it's very, very simple.
Now, Downton Abbey is, I don't think there's any question, the most popular thing that's been on PBS in the United States in many years. Can you explain to an American audience, though, the level to which Downton Abbey is popular in England? How do you explain its success in the U.S., and how popular is the show in England?
It's really popular in England. I mean, you know, it sort of gets the same sort of ratings as X Factor and things like that, and Britain's Got Talent on a Sunday evening. When the series is on, but I think it's more popular here, and I think it's down to it's so well written, the characters are so well crafted, and their lives, you just kind of want to see what they're up to, you know, and you become so invested in people like Lord Grantham that you want to see what his views are on Edith maybe having a baby, and then you want to see how Dr. Clarkson deals with Sybil who might be getting ill, and you just kind of want to see what they're up to, and I think it's all down to the incredible acting, because you've got some of the best British actors around, as well as some very good American actors in it as well, and I just think it's the quality of the programming is what made it so popular.
As a fan of the show, are you a little sad that the next season will be the last?
I'm devastated. I just, as long as they don't kill off the Dowager, then I'll be all right, because I don't think I could handle that.
As a fan of the show, do you get a certain delight in skewering the show in America's Got Downton?
Do I? I do enjoy it. Yeah, I love making fun. But like I said, it's always light fun. You know, I've done impressions of my friends' parents and friends of mine for years, and it's never come from a place of all right, mate. That's a bit harsh. It's always sort of it's just sort of looking at people's eccentricities, and that's great.
America's Got Downton is a one-man parody of the hit PBS show seen by many of us on WKAR-TV. That one man is Luke Kempner, who we're talking with here on Current State. I wanted to ask you, what's in your show for someone who hasn't watched Downton Abbey? Someone who hasn't been a Downton Abbey fan, are they going to enjoy your show?
Oh, totally. You know, a lot of my friends are sort of soccer-loving blokes back home who would not Downton Abbey fans, and they've all come and enjoyed it. And, you know, it's not just Downton Abbey. Like, I think, you know, I mentioned there was some Dancing with the Stars characters, and also Chef Ramsay goes to Mrs. Patmore's kitchen, and Sir Ian McKellen, Gandalf, he's there, and Kim Kardashian is there. And John McEnroe. So there's lots of people that, you know, if you've not watched Downton, that there'll be other impressions for you. And the thing is, the characters are so archetypal, you know. You can laugh at Mrs. Patmore even if you don't know anything about her, because she's still the sort of, you know, cook that's, you know, she's always having a nightmare in the kitchen. She's always at breaking point and having to go at young Daisy. And you can laugh at that even if you don't know who Mrs. Patmore is.
So much of our conversation has been about your work doing impressions. I want to spend a moment hearing about other projects you've worked on. I know you've performed in Les Miserables and Avenue Q. Talk about some of your other projects.
I studied music theatre when I was at drama school, and then I went into Les Miserables and Avenue Q, and then I did the Lincoln Center production of South Pacific, which came over to the UK with Bart Sher directing it. And I did musical theatre for about 4 years, and I loved it, and I will always go back to that at some point. But I've got a TV show coming out called Murder in Successville, which comes out on the BBC. And that's really, really exciting. And then when I'm back to the UK, it's going to be I'll be back in the comedy clubs working on my material. And then probably coming back out to the US in September and hopefully going off Broadway before the end of 2015 with the show. And so it's all lots of different avenues that are open.
You mentioned your BBC program. Do you know if that will be available on BBC America?
Hopefully. I mean, it's its first season, so we're hoping that it will do really well, and then they'll bring it over here. But I think it could do really well over here. It's an improvised sort of film noir comedic cop show that's very, very, very funny, and I'm hoping that it'll get a really great press coverage in the UK, and that it'll transfer over here.
Luke Kempner brings his one-man show, America's Got Downton, to the MSU Wharton Center's Paysant Theater on Thursday, April 30th. Showtime is 7:30. Luke Kempner, thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Lovely to speak to you.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.
And that's Current State for Wednesday. Coming up tomorrow on the program, East Lansing residents will have the chance to vote on ballot proposals to decriminalize marijuana and change the city charter. When it comes to selling city-owned properties, we talk to Mayor Nathan Triplett and Attorney Jeff Hank, who chairs the Michigan Comprehensive Cannabis Law Reform Initiative Committee. Plus, in its first season, the Lansing United soccer team won its conference championship and made it all the way to the national semifinals. Season 2 gets underway this weekend, and Current State Scott Pohl talks with owner Jeremy Sampson about building minor league soccer in the capital city. The executive producer of Current State is Peter Worf. April Van Buren directed our show today. Thanks also to Melissa Benmark, Scott Pohl, Kevin Labrie, and to Drew Hill. Past episodes at WKAR.org or subscribe to our podcast, please. Glad you could join us today. You've been listening to Current State on WKAR.